unusual, and he knows the charges that have been levied. He knows the accusations that have been made. He knows why Jesus is on the cross. And then he sees how Jesus conducts himself on the cross.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with Pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
So Bill lucked out this week. Just one verse. One verse to read. Scott's over there dying of envy because Scott usually gets like the whole chapter and... Next week, one thing and another. In this verse, Mark tells us that the Roman centurion, a professional soldier, looked upon the crucifixion of Jesus, and based upon what he saw, he pronounced this verdict: truly, this man was the Son of God. It was interesting and just a little bit appalling for me to read the commentaries on this verse, because so many of the scholars and commentators are certain that the soldier didn't really mean it. They say, on the one hand, perhaps he was being sarcastic. You know, it's like you look at somebody who you think is obviously a loser and you think to yourself, boy, there's a winner. It's a sarcastic, ironic statement. And many of the commentators think that that's what this soldier was doing, that he was looking up there and he was joining those who said, if you're the Son of God, get yourself down off this cross. If you have all this power, do something about this horrible, wretched situation you're in. Yeah, he just died. Guess that shows he was the Son of God, huh? Something like that. Others among the commentators, while not going that route, still say that the soldier didn't mean exactly what we think he meant, that he was not giving a Christian confession. Rather, he was falling back on his own heritage to the Greco-Roman notion of the God-man. And they believed, or at least believe in the possibility of many such men, in the vein of Hercules, but also in the vein of the cult of the worship of the emperor, how the emperor would be declared a god or the son of the gods. And sometimes they took it to be somewhat literal, and sometimes they took it to be just that occasional, unique, superior person who came along, and this would be referred to as a God-man, and that was probably what the soldier meant when he said this. Now, there's no doubt that Matthew and Mark, who both record these exact words, Luke says something just a little bit different. I'll let you look that up on your own. But there's no doubt that Matthew and Mark mean this to be understood as a Christian testimony. Jesus is the unique Son of God in the way that they believed it. There's nothing that I can find in the underlying grammar or context or structure that would lead me to believe that they meant anything else. And these commentators don't really go in that direction. They just say in the end that it is so very, very unlikely that this hardened Roman soldier, to be a centurion, he was doubtless a veteran of many campaigns, that this hardened Roman soldier, on the basis of a single day of experience with Jesus Christ, would suddenly turn his head up and say, this man is the Son of God, and mean it in the same way that Matthew and Mark would take it, just so very unlikely. And I read these commentaries and I think to myself, that was kind of the point, Sparky. Sure, it was unlikely that Jesus reaches the most unlikely hearts and his message pours into the most hardened spirits and lives. This would be an especial occasion for Mark because, as you know, Mark was writing to kind of a blue-collar Roman audience, and here you have this Roman professional soldier. So big deal for Mark and his audience if it comes from the mouth of this Roman soldier. Jesus is the Son of God. But all that said, I want to ask you a question and ask you to consider it honestly. Would it be that unlikely? I want you to consider the day that this soldier just had. He knew why Jesus was being crucified. That was not a secret. He could read the sign up there on the top of the cross, and he would have been aware of everything that had gone on just previously. And he knew enough about crucifixions to know that this one is unusual. You don't every day have all this going back and forth between Herod and Pilate and the Jewish high priest and the Roman authorities. And you don't always have this thing where, you can have Barabbas or you can have Jesus. Let's have you. Barabbas, Barabbas. All this is unusual. And he knows the charges that have been levied. He knows the accusations that have been made. He knows why Jesus is on the cross. And then he sees how Jesus conducts himself on the cross. He sees Jesus plead for forgiveness for the very people who have done this terrible, terrible thing to him. He sees Jesus carrying on this dialogue, not with the people around him all the time, but with God above. He sees Jesus refuse the offer of a drug that would at least have deadened his pain, insisting on facing this experience without such aid. He hears Jesus say, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." He hears Jesus say one other thing, which I will come to in a moment at the appropriate time. But then he also experiences the earthquake and the eclipse that seem so providentially associated with this event that he is conducting. And if he understands the connection of the earthquake and the eclipse to the crucifixion, I bet given the circumstances, he intuitively gets it's not about these guys on the left and the right. It's about this guy on the center cross. All these unusual, supernatural seeming happenings. He sees and he hears all that. Now, based just on that, before I move on to two other considerations, how many of you think it would really be so unusual and unlikely for this man perhaps to conclude that this guy whose death is so different must himself be qualitatively different from other people? Two other things. Mark says he saw the way Jesus breathed his last. What does a soldier know? Well, in addition to authority and chain of command and tactics, soldiers know about death. They know a lot about death. They've seen it come. And they've seen how it can claim their comrades so quickly, just like that. And how it spares no one. And they have seen men meet death and know how that tends to go. Soldiers know about death. death. And this one was different. And then the thing I said I would come to. Just before the soldier saw Jesus breathe his last, he heard Jesus give a great shout. Now, the first thing I want to tell you about that is that it would be unusual for crucifixion victims to give a shout anywhere near the end of the process, and this man would know that. It was designed to weaken you, suffocate you, drown you in your own lungs, and by the time you got to the end, people passed out of this world in silence or at most with a whisper and a whimper because they couldn't do anything more. And it would be unusual for a man to come to the end of this process and give a great shout, but more than the physical unusualness of the shout would be the content of that shout. What Jesus said, you have read it in English, he said, "It is finished, done, over." On the one hand, I suppose that is not so unusual. Yeah, it's done. My life is finished. The jig is up. But what you really need to understand from that shout can be expressed in two other words. The Greek word is tetelestai, and the Gospels acquaint us with it. And what you really need to understand when Jesus shouted tetelestai is, "I win." Now that's an unusual thing to say from his perspective on the cross, because on the one hand, it sure looks like the high priest won and Jesus lost. They get to go on with their political machinations and Jesus is dead. It sure looks like the authority of the Romans win and Jesus lost because it was the Roman governor who pronounced this doom and Jesus seemed in the eyes of the onlookers completely incapable of forestalling it or doing anything about it. It sure looks like the people who cried out for Barabbas win and Jesus drew the short straw because Barabbas gets to go free and Jesus is the one about to be carted off to a borrowed tomb. It does not look like he wins. And perhaps it's the last thing the soldier would expect him to say. But I think this is how we need to understand his last shout. "I win." We are fortunate to be able to look at secular usages of most of the words in the New Testament. Blessed that a large body of literature survives besides the New Testament, which uses the language of the New Testament. Some of them are just invoices, and some of them are official political proclamations, and some of them are formal histories, and some of them are just letters that people wrote to and from relatives traveling. And there are all kinds of things like this, but we have this big body of literature that uses the words used in the New Testament as they are understood in the society of the time. As we review that body of literature, we find the word tetelestai used five different ways, six maybe, but five for sure. It is used occasionally by artists as they apply the last chisel cut or brush stroke. It is finished. It is used by workers and contractors when the last shock of wheat is cut, the last nail is driven, the last block is laid. It is finished. And then, more interestingly, it is used frequently by judges, not when they condemn a criminal, but when they conclude that the criminal's debt to society has been paid and it is time for the man or woman who has been subjected to legal penalty, to be set free and restored. The words the judge would use in his legal pronouncement for this criminal is, his punishment is finished. Tetelestai. It was used by merchants. It was the word they would stamp. They didn't have stamps maybe all the time, but it was the word they would put on an account when it had been paid in full. The last penny collected. It is finished. And then the most interesting usage. It was used by soldiers. Here's why I say maybe six, but at least five. There were two different ways that soldiers applied the term. Officers would use the term when a battle was over, but only if they had won. It was never used if you lost the battle. It was only used if you won the battle. There was blood and pain and loss and prices to be paid, but we prevailed. Our cause was advanced. Tetelestai, we won. It is finished. Enlisted men tend to use the word as a battle cry before they launched into combat. Shouting at the other side, it is finished, implied before it begins, you guys are done for because here we come. Tetelestai. This was the way soldiers used the word. Officers at the end of a victorious battle. Soldiers as a predictive war cry at the beginning of a battle. The centurion at the cross would know the expression well. And his ears would perk right up when Jesus shouted that word. He had heard it shouted by mass troops on this and that blood-soaked, rubble-strewn battlefield, but only by the victors, the winners. It wasn't what you would expect. A crucifixion victim who shouldn't be able to shout anything to say. Changing gears a little bit. Counterintuitively, soldiers tend not to be cynics. I say counterintuitively because they certainly see the worst of life and civilization and abuse of power. But soldiers tend not to be cynics. How many of you know the name Ernie Pyle? No relation to Gomer. Ernie Pyle? Ernie Pyle was an embedded journalist in the Second World War who coined a phrase that I am sure you are familiar with. There are no atheists in foxholes. These were the words of Ernie Pyle at the end of his extensive journalistic coverage of the Second World War. A friend of mine, well, more like an acquaintance, classmate of mine from seminary, became, and I have long since forgotten the actual term, I don't know if it's chaplain, general, chaplain, major, something, but he became high up in the chaplaincy in the military. He was there in the Middle Eastern excursions under President Bush. And what he said was that these campaigns are in essence a running revival service with soldiers coming to God in great numbers. Well, of course, some people say, of course, people turn their eyes to God when they're afraid their life may be snuffed out the very next minute. But what about afterwards? Does it stick, or is it only a desperation kind of thing? new study has been done by Virginia Wesleyan University, and you can look it up, checking out Ernie Pyle's contention. 5 decades after combat, most World War II veterans remain actively, devoutly religious by a factor of 25% more than the general population. World War II vets are 25% more likely to be actively, devoutly religious 50 years after the foxholes than the population in general. Findings continue. Soldiers who faced combat are 21% more likely to remain actively and devoutly religious than soldiers who did not face combat. Those who were in the foxholes, as opposed to those who held like stateside administrative posts or worked entirely behind the lines, even those non-combat soldiers are more likely to remain devoutly religious than the general population, but soldiers who faced combat are more likely than they to remain devoutly, actively faith-driven. A further finding, the more the individual veteran disliked war, the more likely they remain actively, devoutly faithful after 50 years. And one more bump up on the odds. The few Silver Star recipients, the ones upon whom the award was not conferred posthumously, the few who were given the Silver Star while they lived are the most likely of all to remain actively, devoutly faithful 50 years after combat. Soldiers still know the things that soldiers have always known. And apparently, it is still more rather than less likely that a soldier will consider Jesus Christ and say, truly, this man is the Son of God. And perhaps with even more reason today, because we have exactly 3 days more historical perspective. The Roman centurion pronounced his verdict on the basis of the way Jesus died. We can add to that our absolute conviction that he rose again. Truly, this man who came out of the grave must be the Son of God. Will you proclaim the soldier's verdict? If you have not already, and if you have, God bless you and keep you firm no matter how many decades may pass. But if you have not yet named Jesus Son of God, will you today pronounce the soldier's verdict?
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family